All right, thank you for joining us today. Let's get started with today's webinar. Good morning and good afternoon, wherever you find yourself in the country. I want to welcome you to the webinar today featuring the IEA Seminar to Russia, the International Education Administrator Seminar to Russia. And my name is Michelle Valorci. I'm an Outreach and Recruitment Specialist at IIE, and I'm joined by my colleague Cecilia Kuczynski-Mulder. She's a Program Officer for Europe and Eurasia. And we are also honored to have Warren Brown, the President of North Seattle College, who was an alum to this program. He participated in 2018 as a grantee to this Community College Administrators Seminar to Russia. So we've got some great information coming from Warren, and Cecilia and I will be kind of walking you through the process. Again, this webinar today is geared towards community college administrators who are interested in the two-week seminar to Russia to learn more about bilateral connections and opportunities for collaboration. So let's begin. Just a little brief background and mission on the program. The Fulbright program has partnered with 160 countries around the world to provide scholarship and grant opportunities to teach and research and study for faculty and administrators and journalists, artists, lawyers, students, to really make a difference and foster mutual understanding and promote cross-cultural exchange. It is the flagship international exchange program sponsored by the U.S. Department of State. And it was established in 1946 by Congress. So we've had several decades of Fulbrighters going around the world, and it's been a wonderful program and experience thus far. And ultimately, through fostering mutual understanding, we hope that the program improves lives around the world. It is administered by IIE, the Institute of International Education, and there is funding also by other foreign governments in addition to the U.S. government funding. Okay, this is the diversity and inclusion statement by the U.S. Department of State, and we just really want everyone to be encouraged to apply for this program. We strive to have the full breadth of U.S. society reflected in the program in terms of background, profile, geographic location, et cetera. And so we really don't want to have anybody feel discouraged. The program is for the U.S. people. It's sponsored by the U.S. government. And so really the idea is to have as many Americans participate in the program as possible. Okay, over to you, Cecilia.
All right. Good afternoon, good morning, wherever you're at. So thank you, Michelle. I'm going to go ahead and kind of take over for the next few slides here. So in addition to the Russia Community College Administrator Seminar, we do have several opportunities available for international education administrators. So the IEA seminars take place in seven different countries. These seminars take place over the course of 2 weeks. Just to note that this year, the one for France is going to be a week and a half instead. But each country is looking for a unique profile, which we'll discuss more in depth momentarily. But primarily, I would recommend that you read through the individual award descriptions for each of the seminar programs to determine which one may be best for you. But we'll be focusing in this webinar on the Russia Community College Administrator Seminar, which has an application deadline of October 15th. But these Fulbright IEA seminars are intended to have broad personal and professional impacts on the grantee. From this experience, their home campus will benefit from the increase of knowledge of the host country's higher education system, and this will aid in the development of programs, international student advising, and broader global collaborations. Additionally, grantees will broaden their network with possible partnerships and cooperation through the other Fulbright IEA grantees. It's important, especially in the case of the Russia CCAS program, we really are emphasizing impacts beyond the program. We understand that two weeks is kind of a quick visit, but it's really laying the groundwork for many different initiatives, which I'll be glad to hear from Warren a little bit more about in the section that he'll be presenting. But just a note about that kind of piece to the puzzle here as you're working through an application. It's important for applicants to think of their application in relation to your university or your, in this case, community college. This is not just a personal application, but more broadly, one that aims to increase institutional internationalization. So really talking to different individuals on campus to sort of determine how this might fit into the institutional short-term and long-term goals. And on a more personal note, this is a really great opportunity to experience the host country and through the guidance of locals and local institutions. So next slide. All right, so a little bit about the eligibility for the program. So this sometimes varies based on the program itself. Again, look at the award description in detail. You know, the degree level is required by award. Oftentimes you may see a PhD or other terminal degree may be required, but some are open to applicants with master's and professional or academic experience. But in this case, for the Russia CCAS program, you have to be a U.S. citizen. And in this case, the terminal degree is not required, but we are asking for appropriate professional experience and accomplishments. Additional requirements vary by award, and given that the audience here for the CCAS program is the community colleges, we would be looking for that exposure in this case. So for individuals who have had Fulbrights in the past, we do have our policies that state that there are no lifetime limits for the Fulbright program. We do have a two-year waiting period between grants, and if you have had any kind of Fulbright Scholar Award in the past, we would be asking you to make a justification for like why another Fulbright, what the impacts may have been from your previous Fulbright and things like that. All right, so the next slide. As you can tell by the title, this is for community college administrators, and this would be taking place in Russia. This is a little bit different than our other international education administrators program for a variety of reasons, but mainly because of the audience. This is kind of a distinct program that is calling for community college administrators. Kind of the evolution of the program is because in Russia, they're very interested in this community college model and sharing ideas about best practices and what works on community college campuses and how they can relate those to the type of schools, kind of similar equivalent schools that they have in Russia. So this program is open to community college administrators, including presidents, vice presidents, provosts, deans, and other individuals with institutional authority for program development and international outreach. Through engagement with Russian educators at a variety of regional institutions, applicants will discuss issues concerning the U.S. system of higher education, focusing on the model and role of community colleges within that system, as well as within your local communities. You'll share best practices in education administration, alternative pathways to higher education, and workforce training. The overall objective is to prepare U.S. and Russian institutions to internationalize their campuses, broaden the scope of their programs, and provide mobility opportunities. Additionally, applicants must have a minimum of 5 years' experience in the community college administration, and preferably are at the rank of dean or above. Applicants must demonstrate institutional authority for the implementation of the programs that they're proposing to develop, as well as the initiatives that would be discussed through the program and what would be kind of the areas of interest for your institution to grow and to kind of develop. Individuals without prior professional connections to Russia and those whose home institutions do not have any established partnerships or affiliation with Russian institutions of higher learning are encouraged to apply. If you do have some programs or some kind of initiatives going on with Russia already, then you would be providing kind of a justification for why face-to-face contact might be important or things like that, but this is really a good opportunity to grow brand new programs or areas of interest. So I wouldn't be too worried about not having contacts or things like that already established within the region or the area. So I'm going to turn it back over to Michelle to continue on here, but I am tuning in, so I'll be ready to answer your questions a little bit later on. But thanks.
Great. Thank you, Cecilia. Okay, so you've gotten a little overview specifically about the seminar to Russia. We do have five others available as well. So when it comes time to determining where you would be a good fit, certainly if you're at a community college, I encourage you to view and consider the award to Russia. But there are some things to consider as you select the award. Since you're only able to apply to one IEA per competition. So even though the deadlines kind of are spread throughout the year, and even the Germany and France deadlines go into next year, this is all part of the same competition. So there are some questions that you should consider, and we've got them up here on the slide. And this PowerPoint, by the way, is being recorded, and so we will have all of this on our website by next week for you to access. So some questions to consider are things like how your campus what their initiatives are to internationalize, what is in their strategic plan in terms of mandates or internationalization, globalization focuses. Do they have any targets for the six countries that we have IEA seminars to, specifically Russia? Are they hoping to enhance collaboration or cooperation with any of these countries? Are there goals at your institution to increase numbers of students from these particular countries in terms of enrollment? Do you have any professional experience with these countries? Or are you keen to kind of enhance your knowledge? And also consider your professional profile. The slide that Cecilia spoke about a couple slides back, each of these IEA seminars is looking for a slightly different profile within an international education administrator. So making sure that your profile aligns with the particular seminar that you're considering. So those are all certainly important points to consider as you narrow down your options. We've got several different great websites and resources on our main page, website that you can look at. We've got the application guidelines and all of that. But aside from that, we've got information on how to craft, guidelines for your letter of intent, your statement of intent, rather, and institutional statement. So there's two kind of main components to that. We do a lot of webinars throughout the competition, just like this one we're doing today. Typically, they're held on Wednesdays, 2 p.m. Eastern time. So if you're not able to join us for a webinar live, we do archive them. So check out the archive. We've got the IEA seminar to India already archived, and I believe Taiwan. We will be hosting the Japan webinar next week, so there's always a bunch of different webinars available. And then the blog, of course, is another great resource. You can hear directly from alumni about their experiences. And last but not least, we encourage you to connect with us through My Fulbright. It's an opportunity to give us a little information about your profile and interests, and then you would get kind of update specific to your interest. Okay, so moving on to the application components. It is an online application form, and as I mentioned, kind of the two main pieces that you're responsible for are the statement of intent and then the institutional statement. So the statement of intent is 3 to 5 pages. And this is your opportunity to explain your specific strengths as a candidate to reviewers and the potential hosts. So it must be clear and compelling to both sets of audiences in and outside of your field. This is really where you speak about your profile and your role and your responsibility at the institution, et cetera. And then, of course, there's the CV or the resume, and that's allowed to be up to 6 pages. Again, really framing it and tailoring it so that it indicates your credentials, your professional standing, and your accomplishments, things like that, including your employment history, everything chronologically starting with the most recent. So it's it's important to have it in that order. So we do require three letters of reference, and those should be in by the deadline as well. The recommender should be able to evaluate your professional qualifications, your potential for institutional impact, and your personal qualifications and qualities. So in terms of who can serve as a recommender, there can be a variety of people who do that, but one at least should be from your current supervisor or someone that you report to at your institution. One reference must be from a colleague in your field, from your own institution or another institution, and they need to be familiar with your role and your administrative skills and leadership. And then one reference can be from any colleague who can speak to your personal attributes and interest in international education. So that kind of broad section of reference is important. We can't accept any references from relatives, so that's one thing. And then anybody from a U.S. Embassy or Fulbright Commission in the country of application or anybody at the Department of State also cannot serve as a recommender. You would actually log in your recommenders through our online application system. So let's say if you're interested in applying by the October 15 deadline and you want to give your recommenders plenty of time to work on the their letter, go ahead and start the application, fill in your basic details, and then go straight to the recommenders section, provide their name and email, and then they will get an automatic email from our application system, and they can start with that. If they don't receive the email in their inbox, please have them check their spam folder just in case, because it is an auto-generated email, and their university filters might be a little strong and put that to spam. Okay, and then moving on to the institutional statement, this is really an important piece. It's a two-page institutional statement, and again, this is required for all of the IEAs except for this particular seminar to Russia, but I will go over it so that you have some information about it. The institutional statement should address general information about your home institution type. So we, you know, paint us a picture of, you know, where you're coming from, the total enrollment, the degrees offered, things like that, the number of international students on your campus and where they're from. And then specifically, again, if it's for Japan, they would like to know specifically how many Japanese students are on campus. Painting us a picture of the study abroad opportunities, any kind of cooperative agreements or collaborations with universities abroad, partnerships, etc., and also the goals of your institution in terms of internationalizing. So that institutional statement is very important. Again, not required for the Russia seminar. So again, it's important to check the award description in our catalog of awards. Each seminar, although they are similar in many ways, does have slightly different parameters in terms of profile and what's required. Okay, so specifically, let's discuss the statement of intent. Again, this is where you have 3 to 5 pages to discuss why you're applying for the award, why it's of interest, how your responsibilities match up to this offering and how they relate to what the goals are of your institution, speaking about the impact this award would have on your career, on your professional development, to your home institution or your community, and then specifically why this country, so why Russia. How would you share what you've learned with your home institution and beyond? So we're really looking for that impact piece. Again, nobody has a crystal ball, but we're looking to see what you anticipate in terms of potential outcomes and impact, and how this participating in this seminar would contribute to the goals at your institution. Again, take a look at the award, the award description for specific requirements and different things that need to be addressed in the statement of intent, because each country has a slightly different preference on what they'd like to hear from the applicants. All right, and then moving along to the review process and the timeline for this particular award to Russia, the deadline is October 15th, so it's about 6 weeks away. In November, we convened the panels for the review committees, rather, and applicants are either recommended or not recommended, and they're notified of their status. And then in January, the final notifications are sent around once the commission, the committees in Russia review all of the applications, and those that are selected then go on to the seminar. I believe it's early part of April for 2 weeks, and so that's that. So let us now turn to our grantee, Warren Brown. And Warren, I'd like to pass it on to you, president of North Seattle College, who participated last year in our seminar to Russia.
Well, thank you. Good morning if you're on the West Coast, or good afternoon if you're East Coast. It's really a great honor for me to be selected as a Fulbright in 2017-2018 to Russia. And also really honored to participate in this webinar to share my insights into the Russia CCAS process. Fulbright has really expanded the opportunities for really myself and also faculty at my college, as well as the college as a whole. So I'm a strong advocate and promoter of Fulbright. So I have a few slides, and I'm going to share with you what you should prepare for before the program, during the program, what you will experience, and then post-program. So we'll go to the next slide. So preparing for the program, you heard a bit about the application. I want to give you some ideas based on what my experiences were putting together a successful application. First thing to note is, you know, how does it fit in your professional development plan, and speak to that certainly within your statement of intent, but also make sure you customize your resume or your CV. You know, 6 pages is not a lot of space if you're an academic with, you know, multiple pages of a CV. I think it's really a value to look at your CV or resume in a new light, because in many ways you're applying for a job, in this case applying for Fulbright. So if you have a focus on global or multicultural education, or an interest, or you've been into workshops that do that, or you've done any papers, you know, really make that the heart of your statement of intent, so it's really clear from that point of view, as well as your resume, how it all aligns for you in your professional development plan. Then your leadership role within the college or the system is really important to talk about. And the reason that's important to talk about is you can communicate more directly what is the strategic plan for your college, how will this Fulbright fit into it, and what's your role in leading the strategic plan process at your individual college. So really think about your role in the college, but how you help serve that strategic plan. Next, know the gaps and the needs of your institution. What does internationalization mean? You know, some colleges, they focus on international, meaning inbound students versus outbound experiences. And if that's the case, that's okay. You'll just need to note that although your college might be focused more on inbound students, your intention is to grow in a new way by looking at more experiences that will be outbound for faculty or staff or for students. Next, how are the benefits of the broader community? So a little bit about North Seattle College. North Seattle College, we're part of a three-college district called the Seattle Colleges, and we're in Washington State. So what I thought was important was within your statement of intent to show the impact. You need to show the impact not just for your college, but if you're in a system that is a district, make sure you talk about what are the district-wide benefits. And beyond that, think about what could this look like at the state as a whole. So for myself, for the three letters of reference, one, it came from my direct supervisor, who's the chancellor of our system. Two, my the colleague letter came from our vice chancellor for international programs, as she could help me communicate more about the strategic plan connection. But then the third level letter of reference, which I think kind of magnified my application, is I was able to get a letter of recommendation from the director of the community college system at the state level. You know, she doesn't actually manage the colleges, but she deals with a lot of the leadership and policies across the state. So in my statement of intent, I was talking about how will this benefit not only the college, but what would be my role in helping the state of Washington engage in something that is truly unique, which is a partnership in Russia. The next one is to articulate your biases and research questions. I think it's really a benefit to, you know, do some research, learn what you can online about the Russian system and how it is truly different than the American system. And from that, you know, generate the questions that you would want to ask colleagues in Russia about their particular system. And also articulate your biases therein. You know, what do you know about Russia? What do you don't know about Russia? What have you heard in media? What have you seen from others? Just be really clear about what's your point of view going into the program. And, of course, articulating what the outcomes will be to show that there has been an impact made. Then the program itself. As you saw in the timeline is very quick. I think it's wonderful you're getting information through this webinar, but as noted, you know, the application is about a month away. And then once you wait to see whether or not you were accepted or not, if you're not accepted, you know, that happens. And you know, I think it's a benefit if you're not accepted to really try again and think a little bit more about that statement of intent and making sure that you can show that impact. And sometimes that will help your application if you need to do it another time in the future. But if you're able to be selected, it's a very, very quick process. So what I note in the third point down there says, forming to performing, how about storming and norming? So you are then selected with a group. You're quickly formed. You may have email chats between your fellow group members, but at the same time, as you're doing that, you are responsible to make sure you're taking care of visa processing, and that will take a bit of time. So as you're taking care of the paperwork yourself and trying to form and moving into performing with your team, note that you may not have a good chance to really establish norms with your team because you will not meet your team members until you're actually in country. And at that point, you're moving quickly from institution to institution. So to talk about what kind of roles that you will play in your team of other grantees, I think is really important once you get the grant award. I can say for the group that I was in, we really didn't have a chance to norm and talk about how we would engage as a group. And that created some challenges at some times. But ultimately, it allowed us to figure out how could people kind of emerge as leaders in different settings while they were in country. But again, just think about that. It's a very fast process, again, especially with the visa processing. If you were on the West Coast, it was technically about a month before I left to Russia, where the Russian embassy in Seattle was closed. And then the Russian embassy in San Francisco was closed the year before that. So a lot of visa processing then goes through Washington, D.C., if you're on the West Coast. So kind of think about that. But if you're in the Midwest or the East, again, you still need to kind of think about those visa processing times because that will ultimately affect your experience and make that timeline go rather quickly. Then I have, where's my Fitbit? And actually, I don't have a Fitbit, but I know many people that do. And the reason I say a Fitbit is in that two-week period of time, you're going to do a lot of walking. And you will certainly have your travel taken care of from city to city. But when you're on that institution, visiting the institution, you're really a celebrity, and I say that a little bit below. So they want to show you everything at the institution. If they have satellite campuses, they want to show you the satellite campuses. If they have labs, they want to walk you through all the labs. They want to walk you into classrooms. So you're going to find that you're going to kind of almost be like an evaluator where you come to a college and you see everything. because they don't want to show you everything. They're very proud of their institutions, and they're really excited to have a foreign visitor, a Fulbright visitor, coming to see their college. So just know that it'll be some grueling days of walking within an institution. And plus, many of the institutions in Russia, particularly the older institutions, they do not have elevators. So you're constantly going up and down stairs, which is exciting because you're really learning a lot of things in the country, but it can be also pretty daunting as you're doing a lot of walking as well. And as I said a little bit, you know, being a celebrity, they will show you everything of the institution. You know, they're really great guests or a great host for you as a guest. And you're going to get a lot of business cards. Make sure you bring business cards with you as well to share. But the whole point about this is that you gather all those business cards and you're going to be a celebrity. Literally, people will be following you with cameras. Not from the media, but within the institution with cameras, just taking your pictures and your sampling food and meeting with faculty members or students. But remember that all of that's going to end at a certain point, and so you need to think about how are you going to leverage those experiences that you had in that institution as you come back to the United States. So the next slide talks a little bit more about what you'll experience when you come back into the United States. So if we can go to the next slide. So post-program considerations, again, there's literally unlimited possibilities that you will see when you're in Russia until you have to really think about how can you make this sustainable, how can you make it impactful, and how can you make it strategic once you get back home. What my colleagues and myself did in our visit, we decided not to be overly ambitious with having multiple partnerships and having student exchanges and faculty exchanges. In part because that's very difficult to sustain, both for your institution as well as for their institution. So being very clear and strategic about what are those things that you think that you can implement, you know, quickly to show a partnership that's being formed. The next thing to think about is the Russian impressions of the community college system. They're learning quite a bit about us as we are learning a bit about them. Community colleges, you don't really exist in Russia. And also, the Russian system of higher education really is not aligned with the Bologna Accord, where a bachelor's degree is a four-year degree, a master's degree is a two-year degree, a PhD, etc. So they're trying to figure out exactly how do community colleges fit, not only in the United States, but also within their system. So I'll just give a quick example for myself. My institution has a very strong allied health program, including nursing. And nursing in Russia is something that's more of a specialist degree. So it was hard to communicate what were the curriculum and objectives from a community college nursing program when for them they're thinking that has to be beyond a baccalaureate degree into a specialist degree. So as a result, sometimes you find clear areas of partnership around more liberal arts programming, if that is the sciences, or if that is a drama, the performing arts, if that's culinary, that there seems to be a little bit more connection that could be made at that particular point. Think about the political climate. And that goes back to just the visa processing time, which can be difficult, but just plan ahead. Also, when you're in Russia, you make sure that you are following the rules of Russia, and that act like a Russian, don't act like an American there. And you'll find that the citizens and the institutions are very supportive of you and very honored to have an American visit them. But just be aware of that political climate. Also be aware of the political climate when you try to communicate with your colleagues when you return to country to build programs, because your colleagues sometimes will have their own impressions of whether or not they see themselves partnering with a Russian institution. So just be aware of that. Think about how you're going to present. And I say that in two ways. Think about what you're going to present while you're in Russia. They do want to know quite a bit about the educational system. But at the same time, be prepared to have a presentation about your college in particular. When you're in Russia, sometimes they'll have just administrators that want to know a little bit more about Fulbright, a little bit more about the community college system. But then you may also have presentations that are Russian students, and they may not know where your home city is. They may not know what your college looks like. So be prepared for both a more formal academic presentation as well as a bit of a promotional presentation of your college when you're in Russia. But at the same time, think about what you're going to do when you get back to the United States. What I find is that direct faculty engagement is really important, and I gave several faculty presentations and try to get faculty excited about it. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in just a bit. Your role as liaison doesn't end. Even when you come back into country, think beyond sharing the information with your colleagues. For myself, I work with my Fulbright team, and we put together a presentation for the annual American Association for Community Colleges, just to let other people know about Fulbright and to know about the Russian experience. So you'll always find yourself and need to find yourself as a liaison, either within your institution or with the partners you're trying to develop in Russia. So with all of that, I thought it'd be nice to give an example of success as well as an example of a failure. And you know, I will say that failure is relative because not all partnerships actually are sustainable or sustained or start. So I think failure happens probably more than success. But I want to give you an example of both. So for myself, example of success. At the end of the Fulbright visit in 2018, we had a Fulbright alumni seminar of Russians who partake in the Fulbright experience. And in that, exchanged cards and I learned a little bit more about institutions that had Fulbrighters on staff that were excited about Fulbright. And one institution that I connected well at that time was with the Mercy University. It was not a university that I visited while in country. It was just a seminar at the end where they had a Fulbright alumni there. But I was able to gauge their interest. I was also able to gauge what their strong academic programs were. And I began to talk about the strong academic programs at my institution. And then we found some synergies around aerospace. In part because Amur State University is located within the Amur region where the Russian government has spent millions if not billions of dollars building a new launch site or a cosmodrome as they call it. And they have a very strong academic program for a satellite development at Amur State University. For us, North Seattle College, I was talking about our science program and our rocketry program. And we discovered that there is a bit of an opportunity for both institutions. For us, rocketry is really the applied sense of the academics, where it's really run as a student club. The Russians had never heard about student clubs. So they put together a student club around rocketry payload. Our students in Seattle, with their rocketry club, were building the rocket itself that would house the payload from Mercy University. And the goal was to enter in the international rocket competition. So we had a program-based learning or project-based learning where the Russian institution had never been part of this international rocketry competition and that we were basically their hosts and took the payload as well as we were showing a unique international partnership. Well, that actually grew. So from that, we had a lot of student-to-student Skype sessions that were successful, and the students were excited about doing more. Faculty members were excited about doing more with them. And then I committed that I would bring a faculty member with me on a college-paid trip back to Russia and visit Amur State University, just so we could get a better sense of how their curriculum was set up, also that we could help supervise what they were building as the payload for the rocket that we were building in the United States. So in the picture, to the left of me is our faculty member, Tracy Peretani, who went back to Russia this past year with me as we signed an agreement with Mercy University. What's significant here is Dr. Furutani not only was just so appreciative about this joint project with the Rocketry Club and the Payload Club in Mercy University, he was also thinking about a Fulbright. So based on that experience, he applied for a Fulbright specialist position and actually recently got a Fulbright specialist grant. So he will be going to Russia as a faculty member here this fall for 2 weeks to assist with teaching aerospace and physics there at Mercy University. So you know, the great part about Fulbright is not just your experience, but think about the impact of how can you get faculty involved? How could that turn into the faculty actually applying for their own Fulbright? And so we're really thrilled with the partnership with Mercy University, and that continues to grow. But what I want to share finally is examples of failure. Again, most partnerships do fail, or you're not able to get them off the ground, either because the Russian institution has something that they wish had the partnership that may not be sustainable from your point of view. Let me give a quick example. There is one institution that was really focused around computer science. And NorthSouth College, we have a strong computer science program as well. It was clear through the conversation that they were really looking for faculty members that could go there for future Fulbrights or even under contract for a full year period of time. Well, that was unsustainable because our faculty members in our institution, they did not have the luxury of time of taking a year away from our college to go to Russia to assist with their curriculum. So that's one example. But in general, I find that for community colleges, we have faculty and administrators that are wearing multiple hats. So for that reason, initiative fatigue can happen. So again, you're going to be a liaison. You have to show that this is not going to be part of initiative fatigue, that this program, this Fulbright experience, will be something that will benefit them and moves towards that strategic plan of the college. So that's one way to address initiative fatigue issues. The other one is the development and support can be minimal for programs. If you're looking at faculty exchanges or curricular exchanges or project-based learning like we're doing at North Seattle, you know, faculty members are really concerned about enrollments in the program right now, and the thought about traveling overseas or to do Skype sessions with a Russian counterpart that might be in a different time zone, certainly in a different time zone, can create challenges for faculty members who are just thinking about the enrollments in front of them. So be aware of that, and again, I think it's really important to think about this not just as a top-down, meaning if you're a dean or a vice president or a president, but you're really a liaison, that you've got to get the faculty members excited because they're the ones that are going to help sustain relationships. And you're going to have to broker between your position and then whoever the higher administrator is, if it's the president, or in my case, the chancellor, or if you are the lead college in the district, you need to talk with your board of trustees to make sure that there's full buy-in, that you're going to be able to sustain this in ways going forth. And I think if you do that, that helps address some of the issues about is this top-down or really a bottom-up, or that we're really working together on the shared strategic plan direction. So anyway, that's a few things based on my experience there. I really enjoyed my experience with Fulbright. I'm really excited to promote Fulbright, excited for my faculty members to get engaged in the specialist program. I really encourage you to apply. Yes, you could apply to Japan or Russia, Japan or France or Germany, but you know, a lot of people already have connections and partnerships there. And there's so few partnerships in Russia, I think that it's just fertile ground to do something that is truly remarkable for United States institutions and for Russian institutions. And I think that being in part of the cutting edge on this is a way that we can all benefit from shared experiences through the Fulbright program. So I really encourage you to put your best foot forward, and hopefully the information that that you received today will give you some insights on how to put together a successful application.
Great. Thank you so much, Warren. This has been really illuminating, and I appreciate your examples at the end with with the case of a success story with Amur State, and then a case of one where the kind of goals were not really aligned well. But I mean, I think this underscores the importance of at least the exposure that this visit provides and the access, as well as the avenues for potential collaboration. Could you speak a little bit about the other American grantees that went with you, and how, if any, if you've been, you know, in contact with them, and how the seminar has played out on their campus, if you guys shared best practices and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we returned to the States, we scheduled, I think it's like every month we had a video chat just to see how things were being managed at their colleges. And then around that same time, we decided that's when we were going to do a shared presentation for the annual American Association for Community Colleges, just to talk about what are the challenges and opportunities for internationalization through the Fulbright and the Russia program. So what I found out from my colleagues, what I had talked about with initiative fatigue, that happened at some of their colleges, where as exciting as this experience was for them, it was hard to translate that into this is a priority going forward at your college. And I think in part because some of the other members of the team, really I was the only college president there, so I was able to commit additional resources to return to Russia, and I was able to use that to help faculty realize that I'm totally committed and it's in alignment with our strategic plan. A few of the other colleagues, I know they had presidential leadership transitions that occurred, so it was still aligned with the strategic plan, but they did not have that same top-down support. So again, don't just look at the top-down, but figure out as a liaison that you will be, for those of you that are successful in Fulbright, you've got to have that grassroots support that will build the excitement, and you've got to be the lead on that, because it's true, when you get back to campus, you're going to see all the opportunities and challenges that you had left before you went to Russia still facing you. So you have to make the time to make this work. And again, I think the challenges from the other team members was just the sustainability when there's leadership changes and how to keep you know, faculty thinking about this as a great opportunity within the program.
Great, thank you. It looks like we don't have any questions that have come in just yet, so I'm going to scroll to the next slide to share a little bit about the upcoming webinars we have. Next Wednesday, the 11th, we have a webinar featuring the seminar to Japan. And then in December, the webinar for the opportunities in France and Germany. And please do keep in mind the webinars about the seminar to India and Taiwan are available on our archive in the same place where you'd find the webinar schedule. The next deadline is the award to Taiwan's deadline, September 16th, and then this award to Russia is October 15th. So I don't believe we have any questions. I'm going to share our last slide, which will take you to all of our resources online as well as the email contact. If you have any questions that come up after this webinar, as you consider the award options or are considering Russia, please do email us at iea@iie.org. That's again iea@iie.org. That's the email that my colleague Sarah answers. She'll help you with all of the questions you have. She'll look at your resume to see if you're the right fit for a particular seminar. Again, you can check our website, cies.org, and sign up with my Fulbright. I want to thank Warren, our grantee. Warren, this has been a very enlightening webinar, I think, for our attendees about the award to Russia. And I want to thank you for your time in putting this information together. I think it was spot on. It's been very helpful. Cecilia, I want to thank you for joining as well. Is there any last comments that either of you had before we close?
Not too much, just mainly on my end, just please really consider applying. I mean, you heard from Warren as far as what benefits are there, not just for yourself, but also for your institution and really these connections with institutions in Russia as well. It does kind of provide a few more opportunities as far as widening the network through the Fulbright program and things. So, you know, definitely reach out to us if you have questions. We're really happy to help to get you to the point where you decide to apply and really getting your institution on board as well, since you see it really does have kind of a greater impact institution-wide, and the institution would be, your institution would be needed to really try to push through some of these programs and different things like that. But thank you all for joining.
Great. Thank you, Cecilia. And Warren, we've been receiving some comments about how informative the webinar was. Thank you very much. I would like to thank all of our attendees for joining us today for this webinar. Again, it will be archived. And on behalf of the Fulbright Program and the Institute of International Education, we thank you for joining and wish you all the best in your application. Bye-bye.